You are listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey kids!
Look, up in the sky! It's a bird!
It's a plane!
It's Dance Off, bro! Me and you!
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gilbert.
I'm Adam Bishop.
I'm Chris Ellis.
I'm the Hey Kids Comics Desperado.
I'm Batman.
Who's a villain in Captain Canuck?
What does he do?
Taking our maple syrup, eh?
I'm gonna chuck my hockey puck in my beer bottle at you. Take off, you hoser.
Gwenpool. I mean, Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff. This is gonna be worth a few bucks.
And nobody wanted it.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
When you're trying to come up with an offensive movie that you want to reclaim, it's time to segue into the next porn comic segment, Adam.
How can you not have seen Airplane? What are you guys, young?
I talked to him directly, so I got a mass order. So I have like a good 5-inch stack inside my comic box.
Right,
that's below average.
Halt! Smash!
Hello and welcome to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show. I am one of your hosts, Adam Bishop, and today with me are
Chris Ellis,
Martin Baruda,
and Dan Collins.
Guys, I am wearing a Punisher hat today.
Is it an officially licensed Punisher hat?
It is. I bought it from Universal Studios Orlando a bunch of years ago.
A bunch.
I bought it because it says it on the side, and I knew that I would never possibly see anybody wearing it in the streets of Peterborough, so I feel unique.
I actually have a glow-in-the-dark Punisher hat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But then you see cops wearing it now, though, in Peterborough as they're heading to get their cinnamon buns.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the best part is that Adam's wearing this hat and he didn't even know about our discussion from last week's show because it hasn't aired yet and he wasn't on it.
I was not there.
So this was such a great coincidence. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Martin figured out how to schedule posting in WordPress really hard. You click the button that says schedule. So the show's going to be hitting the website and the podcast streams at 8 p.m. on Friday at the same time it's going to be broadcast on the radio station.
Oh, cool.
On Trent Radio, CFFFM 92.6. Did I get it?
Not sure. It's been so long since we've been in the station itself.
I don't know if there was enough Fs, Adam.
I know.
I drive by the station like every day and I always get stopped at the lights there and look over longingly at the station and go, I miss it.
Yeah. Did you say 92.6?
96.2.
No.
I don't know what I said.
And I'm sure I said it wrong the other day, too. It's Trent Radio 92.7 CFFFM.
I definitely said a 6.
Oh, Martin was quick on the Google on pick on that one.
Radio stations.
I did. I had to type it. I had to Google it. We've got the intro like pre-recorded and the outro pre-recorded, and I haven't had to say it in forever. And yeah, no, I had to Google.
My 2 years of radio broadcasting education from 20 years ago, the only thing I remember is that radio stations always end in an odd number.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Just on the FM channel or on both AM and FM?
On the FM. On the AM, they're all even numbers, I think.
Yeah. That's
because they're all up by tens.
Just like in most cities, the north side of the street is the even numbers and the south side of the street is the odd numbers. Learned that as a pizza driver.
What pizza place?
Ricky's Pizza, corner of Park and McDonald. It's a house now. It was a house and then it was like a pizza place and now it's back to being a house. Ricky's Pizza. All the radio guys from The Wolf and Chex and all that, they used to go there for pizza all the time. So we had
Is that sketchy kind of fallen down house on the corner there?
Yeah, right across from what used to be Peterborough Volkswagen.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've fixed it up a couple of times. But yeah, the bottom floor was the pizza place and we had to go into the basement to go get the cheese and all that sort of stuff and make pizzas. I actually got, and I wish I kept it. My gosh, do I wish I kept it. Moxie Fruvis's first cassette ever released, the smaller one, he had it on compact disc. It was new format, compact disc.
Nice.
And I got it. One of the DJs gave it to me on compact disc. Did I have a compact disc player to play it with? No.
Nope.
No, not at all. This was new. It was fancy. Compact disc.
Adam, do you know who Moxie Fruitvis is?
No, I don't know who that is.
You're killing me.
Who is the singer? Who is the singer in Moxie Fruitvis? Or the main guy who got famous?
There was a couple, but the drummer singer that ran into trouble was Gian Gomeschi.
Yes, yes, that's who I was thinking of.
Later went on to become a CBC host of the Q show until he was no longer the host of the Q show.
I'm pretty sure the majority of CDs I owned when I was younger were soundtracks because that was my generation.
It's actually kind of funny that you say that because the very first audio cassette that I ever got as a kid, it was actually a Christmas gift. It was a cassette player and two cassettes. The first one was the Empire Strikes Back soundtrack on cassette. It was the first time I ever got a cassette. But what was the second one? Guess. Somebody guess. What was the second cassette that my mom, my ethnic Polish mother, thought that her 9-year-old son really needed to listen to?
David Hasselhoff?
Meatloaf, Bad Out of Hell. So I was listening to Meatloaf, Bad Out of Hell, and the Empire Strikes Back soundtrack.
My mom had that tape.
Oh,
it's true. My first cassette tape was the soundtrack to Mallrats.
Nice. I thought people your age liked Meatloaf.
We did. Yeah, Meatloaf was good.
Mm-hmm. That was supposed to be a joke.
A little ketchup on top.
Yeah, exactly. Meatloaf and some ketchup. You gotta have that fried egg. You gotta have that hard-boiled egg in the middle. It's not meatloaf without hard-boiled egg in the middle.
Nice.
So after the show last week, we were kind of chatting away, and I asked Dan if I was interested in starting with Doctor Who, where should I start? And
Adam's face already. He's already getting ready.
I'm laughing. I'm sorry.
Pull out your pillow.
Don't start snoring, Adam. So we started with season 5, which was recommended. And, you know, we enjoyed it. It was fun. It was funny in parts. It was action. It was actually a pretty good series, really. We've been binge watching it. And we started at season 1 now with Chris Eccleston. So that's where we're at. But since in a week, we've watched 16 episodes.
Jesus. You're beating me. And I live alone and don't have anything to do.
So, yeah, that's because it was 13 episodes in season 5. And we just finished episode 3 of season 1 tonight. So,
well, I have bad news for you. Is that Eccleston's season gets sillier and goofier as it goes along.
Yeah.
So you've only seen the tip of the iceberg here.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I liked Eccleston's run when it was happening.
I thought it was great, but rewatching it, it's so much goofier than the show has become.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's kind of campy. It's like watching Batman 66. It's like, you know, you don't see the boof bam stuff, but it's kind of goofy, and you know, even like the CGI in it is really, really bad. So
it was top notch at the time.
Oh, I'm sure it was. But
no, it wasn't.
And you know what? I was just gonna say, no, it wasn't, because we were watching it, and my wife's like, "Man, this is really cheesy," and I'm like, "Well, you have to think this is like 2005 for one. So it's 15 years ago and almost 16. And, you know, so the graphics aren't all that great." I said, and it was a British show. So it's not like it was a Hollywood, you know, where they're throwing big dollars at it. Right. It was kind of a, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say low budget, but it was pretty low budget.
It's high budget, low budget, right? Like it's a high budget show, but they don't care if it looks great.
Yeah.
This was also like a relaunch as well. So nobody was sure whether the audience would return for it and stuff like this. So the budget wasn't particularly huge. But that's the case with all the Doctor Who's. They've always been relatively low budget and you know, just kind of goofy, campy fun, especially like the Fourth Doctor. Am I thinking right? Fourth Doctor?
I don't know. You got me.
Doctor? Tom Baker. I'm Tom Baker, the man.
Oh, Tom Baker? Oh, yeah.
The main guy. The head honcho.
Lobo?
The Sean Connery. Oh,
the main Doctor man. Who.
I said Sean Connery. Tennant now the, Adam's interested.
I'll give David Tennant the Daniel Craig moniker. David Tennant's my favorite of the new ones.
Nice. So anyways, we gave it a good go, and you know, we're enjoying it as watching a show. So sorry, Adam.
That's okay.
You're going to be all by yourself going, I don't know. I don't understand what they're talking about. Who they're talking about.
The thing I like with Doctor Who, Chris, is that you're just going to, when you go from Eccleston to Tennant, you're going to go like, oh, this is, Eccleston was great, but this is so much better. And then, you know, Matt Smith is great. And depending on if you like Capaldi and stuff later on, but I enjoyed
Matt Smith. He was.
So. Yeah. But you've only seen one season of Matt Smith.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's kind of has three quirky seasons. And goofy and yeah.
Yeah. And so I recently started rewatching a lot of Doctor Who, filling my time with something that I love, because it turns out that I do really enjoy watching Japanese samurai movies from the 60s and 70s. And I do really enjoy existential dread movies that are in Swedish from the 50s and 60s. But they kind of bring you down a little bit after a while. And Doctor Who is just that silly, fun, like great entertainment that I needed to boost me up. And I've been watching a lot of that recently and rewatching some random episodes from Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi's run. It just kind of like almost physically hurts me how much better the show was back then than it currently is. Oh, yeah. Because there's no heart to the show at all. The show, I watched like the last three or four Christmas specials over the holiday season, and literally teared up or cried at every single one of them, because they have some sort of like huge emotional punch in them. And they're so full of heart and so full of great characters. And that is not what the show is anymore. There's no emotional attachment in the show anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's because Rose is missing.
No, Rose sucked.
What?
She wasn't great.
Hush now. Don't make me throw you into the waiting room.
Did you throw Adam in the waiting room? He's disappeared.
No, Adam, no, he's just
Adam
he's
left
just
to go to grab snacks. A
cinnamon bun. Yeah, picked up a cinnamon bun.
Adam left to go get snacks.
Anyways, long story short, I hope Doctor Who can.
Okay.
I hope Doctor Who can get back to how great it used to be. Yeah, and also on some other Doctor Who news. They announced that the seventh Doctor's first season is going to be the next Blu-ray box set out. Now, this is arguably the worst season of the entire 27 years of Doctor Who's classic run. So,
so see how it sells.
So you're going to pick that one up, Marty?
Oh, yeah. I'll still get them. I think I'm up to date. I should actually check.
They haven't released anything for a long time because of COVID, so yeah.
Okay, so I'm probably doing okay.
Dang COVID.
Yep.
Stupid COVID.
Wrecking everything. They've postponed the Snake Eyes movie indefinitely.
Oh.
They're just blaming COVID for that, but it was already.
I'm sure there's probably more reasons than that, but I'm blaming COVID too. Darn COVID.
Stupid COVID.
Wrecking all my fun.
So which season are you saying?
Me? Yeah. It's the seventh Doctor's first season is the next one that's out.
I don't know if I have John Pertwee's complete season two.
Really?
It says that's being released June the 1st, 2021.
Okay, well that one's not, yes, that isn't out yet. This one was just announced today, so it's going to be the next one that's coming out like,
which Doctor Who fan site do you follow that broke that news?
Moi, me? I don't. It's from, I don't have to. It's from my Facebook friends who, I have a couple Facebook friends who run one of the bigger Doctor Who websites for news, Doctor Who's news.net or something. In fact, a few years ago, I did Doctor Who comic reviews on their website.
Ooh.
But then I got lazy and just stopped doing it.
That's
kind of like how everything goes, right?
That sounds really familiar. I am so far behind in like articles and stuff. It's just crazy.
I managed to get one long box rebagged and boarded.
Yay.
You know, what else am I doing while I'm watching Doctor Who? I could be doing that, but no.
Paying strict attention, memorizing every word. That's what I do.
If Dan was there with you, he'd be pointing at the screen, be like, he said the thing, he said the thing. And you'd be like,
he said the thing. Okay, but no joke.
What thing?
No joke. When I was watching, I've probably told, I'm going to pull a bad host moment here and retell a story I've probably told before. But when David Tennant finished his run on Doctor Who, I didn't like Matt Smith. When I saw that Matt Smith was like 19 when he was cast or 20. And I was like, man, this guy's too young to be the Doctor. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of his first episode, when he's face to face with the bad guy, not quite face to face, he's almost face to face, but he says to the bad guy, he says, look through your archives and you'll see that this planet is protected. And a hologram comes up showing all the faces of the previous doctors. And then he steps through David Tennant's holographic face and says, I'm the doctor. This planet is protected. Get off this world or something like that. I literally jumped off the couch and was like, yes, I love this guy. I love this guy.
Yeah.
But that is great writing.
The thing that I kind of like about the show is that instead of just recasting the Doctor, it's like when they start the new run, and I mean, I've only seen the two Doctors, right? So each time they've started in those ones, it's like he's just trying to figure out who he is and, you know, sees himself in a mirror and he's like, oh, that's what I look like this time. Could be worse. And
yeah.
So it's just kind of an interesting way for them to constantly be able to change the characters, like as opposed to James Bond, where they just, oh, look, here's a new James Bond, and expect you just to be like, okay, cool, he's James Bond. So at least that gives you a little bit of a backstory kind of to what happened and what's going on.
And also a great jumping on point for new viewers.
Yeah. Yeah, because you don't have to have watched previous
all 27 seasons of the classic Doctor Who plus all 12 seasons of current Doctor Who.
Yeah. Yeah. In order to know what's going on.
Yeah.
Because people wouldn't do it.
Speak for yourself. Speak for yourself.
All right. Most people wouldn't do it. It's like when you walk up to a comic book rack and you look at it and you see Batman is at an issue like 1008. Like, do you grab that issue 1008 or do you just be like, this one's at issue number one, I'm gonna go with that one?
Don't try to segue into comic books. That's Adam's job.
Sorry, Adam.
Oh, it's okay.
Do you remember how hard you would segue back when you first started on the show?
Yeah.
Especially under Doctor Who.
Speaking okay, of comics.
Comics, okay.
I bought a new art book by...
That's not comics.
He wrote comics.
That's porn.
By clear feminist Frank Cho.
We're still waiting for Frank's AWA series, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. And there are images from Fight Girls in this. Actually, I just flipped it right open to a page. There you go. Which means this might have the first appearance of Fight Girls in the book.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know. It might. It might.
Wow.
It's a strong possibility.
And Adam's going to pitch that one hard if it takes off huge.
CGC it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Can I CGC this 300-page book, please?
Yeah,
it's coming. I swear, CGC is going to start grading previews.
Yeah, because they have like 5 or 6 page previews of certain books.
Well, you can slab the Marvel previews, but like previews.
Someday.
Oh. Someday, it's coming.
Yeah,
it's coming. You get
the poor postman would get a hernia carrying those things around. I got 10 of them slabbed. It weighs 300 pounds.
The day they start slabbing actual previews is the day that CGC is higher on the wasted plastic totem pole than Coca-Cola and Pepsi.
It's just bonkers. It's just nuts. Oh, yeah. Hey, I saw something interesting. Apparently, there's a new biography of Stan Lee coming out that is not quite as glowingly fanish as other biographies have been. It's called True Believer, The Rise and Fall of Stan Lee by a fellow named Abraham Reisman. So that would be interesting.
We all knew that the day was coming once Stan Lee passed away that everyone takes off their pants and poo-poos on his grave and his legacy, which is fair, I guess. Controversy?
It's not too bad because there's like a quote from Neil Gaiman. It says, a biography that reads like a thriller or a whodunit, scrupulously honest, deeply damning, and sometimes even heartbreaking. So, I mean, for somebody like Neil Gaiman to actually like endorse it, so to speak, it's obviously not scandalous. It's not salacious, but it's
or at least not untruthful.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be truthful.
You know, I'm assuming they're going to probably hit more along the lines of how he screwed Jack Kirby. And
that might be part of it, but I think there's going to be a lot of other stuff, you know, like the fight with, what was it, Cadence. I think that's what they used to be called, Cadence, the guys. The fellow before Ron Perlman, who sold all the rights to all the characters for movies. What was his name? Brain farting.
I should know it, and I don't remember.
Yeah,
Just reading that book.
Yeah, no, brain farting. But whatever. Idea. It'll be interesting to read. It's $16.99 Canadian for the Kindle or Kobo version. Mm-hmm. $36.63 for the hardcover.
Is there a graphic novel edition? Format?
Yeah, graphic novel. An illustrated version. But I don't see anything here about when exactly it's supposed to be hitting, but.
See, I'm kind of with Stan on his side when he says that he believes that the person who came up with the idea is the original creator, and then getting the artist as a co-creator is fine, because that'd be like, I don't know, like Ian Fleming describing Bond to somebody, then them drawing a picture and being like, I co-created it. It's like, you did the design.
It really depends on how much of that collaborative situation is, because like, they approached Jack Kirby first to design Spider-Man, and the visual characterization of Spider-Man done by Jack Kirby is so completely different from the characterization that Steve Ditko came up with. I don't think Stan would have written the same stories with the Jack Kirby version of Spider-Man.
Do you get a costume creation credit then?
There should definitely be. This is such a weird thing in that, you know, in the last Wonder Woman movie, they had a whole list of comic creators and they had thanks too. But then there was like costume designer. And the question is, okay, did that person actually design the costume, or did they just rip off some designs done by, you know, whomever was the Wonder Woman artist at the time? So shouldn't that Wonder Woman comic book artist have gotten at minimum co-costume design credit?
Or costume inspired by this person's in-comic costume.
Yeah, like thanks is not enough. Mm-hmm. You know, like this character is co-created by this person. The costume design was done by this person. You know, like that's all important stuff that it's unions, it's movies versus the source material. It's not something that they used to do in the past, but comics is a visual medium, and the, you know, you can easily point to a pin up somewhere in the Wonder Woman comic books and say that's the costume they used for the movie.
they need to keep the royalties down. Every single person who like dips their hand in it, you're giving them a percentage at this point.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of why the bullpen idea, like back in the day where they had guys who worked 9 to 5 and they just kind of came in and, you know, pounded out comic books. And at the end of the day, they went home. There was no, you know, they worked for the company. So anything that they created was owned by the company. And and that sort of led to the creator owned stuff. But I don't know, like being able to go back, you know, like Jack Kirby's family to be able to go back and say, no, listen, we created that. Yeah, but he was being paid to create that, like for the brand. So it's not quite the same as now where, you know, like a lot of the stuff, like, I don't know, I'm pretty sure the AWA stuff is all creator owned stuff too, right? So it's all like those guys created it. That's their character. That's whatever they want to do with it. That's theirs to do whatever they want. But back then it really wasn't. It was like you worked in an office and you created it for Marvel, and that was who owned everything to do with it. And your pay was getting paid to work, you know, 8 hours a day to pump this stuff out.
It's one of those things where, like, I can't remember what Robert Downey Jr. got for the last Iron Man. $110 million or something, because he got, like, a percentage or something like this. Hmm. And there's guys that drew Iron Man that are broke, yeah, that can't pay their medical bills. Norm Breifogel, who drew Batman for almost a decade, if not more, you know, they're doing – well, they did. Oh, gosh. He hasn't passed, has he? Let's just say he hasn't, and I'm not being gauche, but they had all sorts of fundraisers for him and stuff to pay his medical bills, to pay his rent and stuff like this. When your movie makes $500 million,
yeah,
how hard is it for you to break off a chunk for somebody else, like who's not doing as well? But you're completely right. I mean, if I win $1 million and every single one of my cousins say, can I have $100,000? I got no money left.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, Siegel and Schuster, they were broke as shit.
Yeah.
When the first Superman movie hit and made tons of money for the studio. You know, mm-hmm. Same thing with Jack Kirby. He didn't live the life of luxury. Like Stanley got, I can't remember what it was, $1 million a year pension or something to that effect as editor-in-chief emeritus or publisher emeritus or stuff like this. Mm. Kirby didn't get that.
With no. Stan Lee, there was something in his contract that if he was not employed by Marvel, they couldn't use his created characters. So they had to keep him under contract for his whole life.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, there's a whole bunch of, you know, legalities and stuff, yeah, like this. And he was just good at negotiating contracts. You know, that's all. And people recognize that, like, he made himself a brand. When you think think Stan Lee or you think Marvel, you immediately think Stan Lee. You don't necessarily go Marvel, oh, Jack Kirby. You should, but you don't necessarily, because he drew for other companies and all this sort of stuff. Whereas Stan was the big cheerleader for Marvel. He was front and center. And like, you can't name publishers from DC Comics as well as you can Stan Lee. Like, who stands out as a publisher at DC Comics that guided the ship for decades?
That Levy guy.
Yeah. Levy guy. Perfect example. That
him. Levy guy. Eugene What's Levy?
No. Like, that's an exact, like, perfect illustration. There's just nobody else,
yeah,
at any other comic company except, you know, when we get into the Image further on, when people are more enlightened and have better contracts and creator owned and all that stuff. But there's just nobody like Stan Lee. You know, you could kind of make the argument, maybe Jim Shooter, maybe, kind of, but he bounced between company and company as well. And Adam's sitting here going, who?
Yeah.
No, I'm thinking of that Khan lady. I can't remember what her name is.
Jeanette Khan. I can't remember, a publisher or editor in chief forever and a day. Karen Berger did the entire Vertigo thing and basically launched John Constantine, Sandman, the whole British invasion in DC, Grant Morrison, bringing Alan Moore over. That was all her that did that whole thing and created that entire, basically what made modern Image, not superhero Image, but modern Image, an entity, was that kind of talent, those kind of books, Fables and Hitman and all the other Vertigo books that came out. But, you know, Karen who?
But the one thing that Stan did well is even when comics, like, the bottom fell out of them, like, that guy went to every con that he could drag his butt to. He signed every book, like literally every book that was put in front of him, whether he had anything to do with it or not. Like, you know, I've seen Batman books signed with, you know, because he didn't care. He was just like, you know, I will slap my name on whatever you stick in front of me. But because he did that, because he marketed himself so well, then he was able to negotiate those insane, like, deals with Marvel, because people knew him. Like, you know, they met him, and, you know, he was a personable guy. I don't know him. I never met him. But you see people lined up for miles at comp cons. If he was a dink, nobody would have done that.
He was,
you know, like, at least in public. I mean, he could have been one in private. I have no idea. But,
like, to me, early Stan Lee was a shrewd businessman that didn't do anything differently than any other publisher did. Right. Other comic book companies screwed, quotation marks, their artists and creators just as badly, quotation marks, as Stan Lee did. And then later on, Stan Lee is just one big, huge, massive cheerleader for the entire industry, pushing whenever possible how cool comics are and how great comic books are. And comic, like, towards the late 80s onward, he had never had anything bad to say about comic books. You know, and he was always pushing the industry. Sure, he kept said Marvel once in a while, but he more often than not said, you know, read comics. He didn't necessarily always say read Marvel comics. He was like big cheerleader for the whole industry. So, I personally think he deserves what credit he has. He deserves what adulation that fans have for him. Was he a perfect individual? Gosh, no. But again, I don't think he did anything that other publishers, editors and chiefs and stuff like that weren't doing at the same time.
Well, he was doing the job of, like, basically a regional manager, right? Like, he was making sure that the company's costs remained low and the profits were high. That was his job. Like, when he was the editor in chief, right? Like, that was his job to make sure that, you know, the comics were making money. And at that time they didn't have the ridiculous, you know, stuff that they have now. So it was a completely different time. And they didn't have all the fancy covers.
DC started the covers. So
really it was them?
Yeah, it was DC who was
the gentle.
Sorry.
Just because Legends of the Dark Knight came out with three different colored cardboard,
yep,
protecting, no graphics protecting on them whatsoever, covers.
Mm.
It just get a little just chill.
Marvel's guilty of it, but then DC had the 52 covers per what book was it? It was for New 52,
Justice League, right? Of America came out with 52 covers, one for each state. One for Canada, one for Puerto Rico, and I think there was another one.
Washington, D.C., I think. Or, yeah, sorry, yeah.
That's in the 50 states, isn't it? Doesn't it count as one of the 50 states?
What is it? I have no
District
idea.
District of Columbia.
Yes, that's not a state, no. Them in Puerto Rico do not count.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know Puerto Rico is an outlying territory.
Since we're talking about character-owned stuff, I know that Chris is going to be able to answer this for me. What was the deal in Spawn number 7, was it, or 6, with Angela? What happened there again?
So Todd let somebody guest write his book.
Neil Gaiman.
You know, yeah. He let Neil Gaiman come in and he created some characters and they just so happened to be popular. And so one of those was Angela. And that, so Todd, they ended up fighting about it because Todd wouldn't pay him royalties on the character that he'd created.
But I'm sure his character to take with him when he left, right? Because he created it? Or was Todd like, you know what? It's in my book, so it's mine.
I'm pretty sure Todd was like, it's in my book, so it's mine. Yeah. So he went with,
wasn't worded as ironclad as they probably should have.
He got Alan Moore'd.
So then it went to court for a lot of years.
And now it's is it a Marvel character now?
Yeah. So what happened was Todd got mad. And so because of all of the legal stuff that was going on, he's like, you will never see Angela in print ever again. And so in any of the collected works, that issue just is not in it.
Really?
Oh yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so finally, I think it wasn't all that long ago. What was it, about, I don't know, 5 or 8 years ago? Neil finally won. And he was awarded the character. And the first thing he did was turn around and sell it to Marvel.
Amazing. Well, Todd may have lost her, but he still has Mr. Miracle, so it's okay.
That was a whole big, huge thing, too, the Mr. Miracle legal fight as well. Because that was, I want to say Lev Gleason, honestly, to be honest with you, who owned it, but I could be wrong.
And then Todd thought he did, then he sold it, but it wasn't his right to sell.
Yeah, it's just a convoluted, strange, you know, somebody owned the character in the Golden Age, and then somebody else fired it back up in the Silver Age, and blah, 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 and who had the rights and who didn't and stuff. But I'm pretty sure that got all straightened out-ish, too, didn't it?
I believe so, yeah. Those are the interesting comic character stories. Those are the fun ones.
What is that series? Is it Marvel 1602? Is that what it's called? Neil Gaiman? He did that series strictly to pay legal fees.
Ooh.
He used all the money from Marvel 1602 to pay the legal fees for this fight for Angela.
Is that the one that has Spider-Man with like the frilly neck thing? Like,
yeah, they're in 1602. But yeah, like it's just one of those things it's just crazy. It's bonkers. It's silly. It's whatever.
But what else is funny is that he only took Angela. He didn't take Medieval Spawn, but I guess Medieval Spawn is like technically a Spawn just from a different time period.
Yeah.
But he also created Cagliostro, which is like the homeless guy who was an ex-Spawn. But I guess then again, he was an ex-Spawn. So I guess you can't really take that Spawn.
Yeah. It's a derivative character. So they said no.
So the only
like
one
the rights, could... it's like the legal rights to Superboy and Supergirl and stuff like this. And
yeah. Yeah.
It's not a completely different character.
The only one he could run away with was Angela. And when he finally won, I was like, okay, you know, like probably the biggest knife in the ribs he could have done would be to sell it to Marvel. And that's exactly what he did.
I wonder if Todd has ever gone to them. It's like, can I license those pages she's in for my book? Is he that big headed that he won't? Wow.
So he has now, once the court case was done, he must have some sort of legal right to sell that appearance, because I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of all the legal stuff, but the new edition of that trade paperback, it has that issue in it now. And it was a big deal because for the first time ever, it was in like a collected works, because before that it wasn't in them.
When they re-released that, did they have a different spine for that volume as well? So everyone would be like, oh, I need to update my entire collection.
Yeah, probably.
Yes. Okay.
Drive everybody crazy. All the Martins out there are just like,
yeah, it's a bit bonkers. I mean, he just had a hissy, like he always had the right to be able to include those pages. He just had a hissy fit and he was like, absolutely not. Because if I do, I gotta break off a chunk for Neil and screw that.
Yeah. And he was already mad at him, but like, there was a big deal with, the reason that they killed Al Simmons. I don't know if anybody else here is Spawn.
I know.
is because it's named after Todd's college roommate. They were buddies, and so he created Al, and he named it after his college buddy. So they had a falling out, and Al's like, "You can't use my name anymore." so they killed Al.
That's just like his character Tony Twist, right? It's based on a hockey player, the name and stuff, and the hockey player successfully sued him.
Yeah.
And didn't Al Simmons go to conventions with his own booth, being like, "I'm Spawn, that's me, I'm Spawn."
Yeah, and he signed books. Like, just last night I was on YouTube going through looking at them, and it says Al Simmons, aka Spawn. Like, that's how he signed the books.
My God.
From the 90s, because he would tour around with Todd, and they had this funny car, with the big wheels and the small wheels and stuff, and they would take those around to the cons and stuff, and Al Simmons would autograph your book. Crazy.
And then you get the naked baby from the Nirvana cover to sign it too.
Yeah, because he's touring now.
Yeah.
Updated pictures.
I did a quick check here on Wikipedia, and it says that there were three characters. It doesn't say exactly which characters here. Angela being one of them, but I'm assuming it's like you said, Medieval Spawn and this other guy.
Yeah.
That a judgment was filed, and they had equal rights to the three characters. They were co-owned by both men, and that judgment was in 2002. But then in 2012, McFarlane and Gaiman settled their dispute on their own, and Gaiman was given full ownership of Angela. Hmm. So he made the agreement, I'll trade you my half of these two characters for all of this character, and they agreed 10 years later, and that's fine. And then it also says here that when Neil returned to Marvel, he brought Angela with him, but Marvel Comics did not buy the rights to Angela. He still owns the rights.
Oh, so they're just borrowing.
They were just like, "Hey, can we, Neil was probably like, "Hey, I'm coming back to Marvel. I'm going to draw Marvel shit. You guys want to use my character?" And he probably gets a chunk broken off.
That's funny, because even Hasbro did a Marvel Legends figure of her.
Yeah.
So apparently it's been confirmed Marvel Comics didn't buy the rights to Angela from Gaiman.
Hmm.
And there's a Bleeding Cool article that states that from 2013. That's 7 years ago. Maybe shit changed.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think so. I imagine... A lot of the creator-owned stuff, they really don't want to give up those rights. And if him and Todd shook hands and walked away, then I'm sure the deal was, you can take this character and don't ask for the revenues on the other two, and then just license the crap out of them.
Oh, they probably all bank on movie rights now. But if you're not Marvel, DC, or the Ninja Turtles, the comic book movie isn't really going to do anything.
Yeah. And the Spawn one's been dragging on for so long that the second movie that, you have a better chance of making my own movie than having.
Now these ambiguous rights from the 70s and 80s and 90s where, creator owned wasn't on the creator's horizon, forefront to make sure that the contracts are negotiated such, has caused some massive problems for me personally. Because I want desperately a Marvel Masterworks or a Marvel Epic Collection of ROM and Micronauts and some of those amazing, Godzilla, some of these amazing
Muppet Babies
comic books that Marvel made in the 70s and stuff like this. I guarantee if I gave you a copy of the Micronauts series, especially the first 12 issues, Adam, you'd love it. It was fantastic. It was great comics.
It's not Marvel's porn, imprint, though.
Marvel's imprint, was that Star or Now? I can't
Star.
Remember. So it was Star. Star, okay. Who was Now? Was that DC?
I think Now was Marvel as well at one point in time, wasn't it?
I have no idea. There's so many. But yeah.
The Star was the kids' cartoon.
Star was the kids' one. Now is the one that that was,
didn't they do Terminator Comic-Con and stuff?
Tops. Anyways, doesn't
Tops.
But well, you remember Tops Comics.
Yeah, I had a bunch of Tops, Jack Kirby comics. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. They're garbage.
Yeah. Terminator Saga. The first Terminator series, that was Now, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, maybe.
So that isn't what I'm thinking of. Anyways, beside the point. Micronauts from the 70s, especially the first 12 issues. Freaking amazing.
You can get a lot of those books at Comic Alley.
Oh, yeah. Like, they're not too expensive, so you can fetch them. But yeah, like in the day of the omnibus, we want it. We want it. It was recolored badly and reprinted in a Baxter series, like the thicker quality paper, the first 12 issues. Oh, my gosh. To get, like, high res, nice, clean.
Okay. I have Terminator, but it's Dark Horse.
I'm having
a it was Now Comics. I have the Terminator from Now.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. And they did the real Ghostbusters and... Oh, I just lost it here. But yeah, they did a bunch of other stuff too.
Now Comics was a comic publisher founded in 1985 by Tony Caputo.
Oh, so it's just an independent. Okay.
Yeah.
It was independent. And they did Mr. T and the T-Force, Speed Racer, Alias, Terminator, The Real Ghostbusters, Fright Night, Married with Children, and Green Hornet.
I have a couple of their Married with Children books. They're horrible too.
Yeah, I actually have the Mr. T book. So I bought it at one of the Comic Cons because the guy had it. So it's a three pack. It was something that they had made up to give to comic shops. But I don't know where this guy had, because he had hundreds of them. And he was selling them for, I think they were like $20 a pop. And it's actually signed with a certificate of authenticity from Mr. T.
Nice.
So I see Adam laughing at me.
When he dies, that's going to be worth some money.
And I doubt it. I doubt it. But what's his name? Oh, the guy who drew Green Lantern. He actually did the art for the book.
Bill Staten?
No.
Mike Grell?
No, Neil.
Who's Mike Grell?
Neil Adams?
Yeah, no, yeah.
Yeah, Neil Adams did draw Mr. T, didn't he?
Yes, he did. So.
Marty's mind is blown.
So I have this book and I was going to get Neil Adams to sign it, but he was charging like way too much to have him sign this $20 Mr. T book that I just picked up. But I was like, come on, it's Mr. T book. So
now, yeah. Come on. If you had gotten that witnessed and slabbed Mr. T authentic signature from Neil Adams, that would be a collector's item.
Yeah, and it's the gold foil cover and then like the play a photo cover of Mr. T. It comes with a trading card and it's like gold steel or gold seal, and it came with the certificate of authenticity. It's in like a black plastic fold out like case. It's got like the two books in it.
What you should have done was go to get an actual good comic for him to sign and then just pull out pockets like, can you sign this garbage for me, please? It's like, I don't want to have to pay for Mr. T. He'd be like, fine.
Well,
no, that's not how Neil Adams works.
No,
Neil Adams will make you pay.
Yeah, he'll make you pay. But Mr. T and the T-Force at my comic shop, the gold edition is $40 and fine to very fine condition.
Really?
7.0.
That's crazy. These are all like, they're mint.
Yeah. Should have bought it off Chris before you told him.
The one with the free gold foil trading card is $3. But the first one, comic only advanced edition with gold foil logo on cardstock cover. This edition, one per retailer, signed and hand numbered by Mr. T, limited to 10,000 copies.
Do you think if you sent it to CGC, you would still get the signature series because it comes with the certificate?
No, not how it works.
CBCS would give you their authenticated with the red label.
They've Come on, Adam. That's not how it works.
I know. I have all my
CBCS
notes.
Has changed that now. They don't have a red label anymore.
Oh, no. It's
both
all yellow.
Witnessed and certified are both yellow now.
Hmm.
But it does specifically say whether it was witnessed or whether it's a certified.
Verified.
Yeah, verified. But, CGC, unless it's witnessed by a CGC witness, forget it. Like, if the CGC witness bends over to tie a shoelace when the guy signs it, too bad. Doesn't count. Now,
if he blinks halfway through the signature,
it's an unspoken thing, so we're not going to speak about it. But I
assume that they're sitting there going like this as they're watching.
I have heard of a few CGC guys going, oh, okay, here's the books, gives it to the creator. I'll be back in 10 minutes. Goes to the next creator, drops off a bunch of books, goes to the next creator, drops off a bunch of books, goes back to the first creator. Did you sign those 10 books? Yes? Okay, cool. There it is. In the T-Force.
So what is this book about?
I don't know. I've never actually pulled it out. But if you...
You're devaluing it right now.
So there's... you've got like, it's all like in plastic, like this display case binder type thingy.
Yeah, that's crazy, eh?
I don't think that would fit in slab.
No,
it would. Yes, it would. Yes, like it would.
It's like, I don't know, almost 2 feet long with the two books in it. And then, yeah, and then it comes with the certificate of authenticity and a picture of Mr. T. Like,
I think you got the expensive version there, buddy.
Yeah.
I think you got the expensive version.
So where did you pick that up?
A guy was selling them at the show because Neil Adams was there.
When you say them, do you mean multiple?
Yeah. Oh yeah. He had a whole long box full of them. Like they made 10,000 and he had like 250 of them.
Holy shit. You only grabbed one.
I bought one. Well, it was
Why would he buy more?
It was 20
bucks. Save some money for cinnamon buns.
Exactly. And,
he's going to stop talking about cinnamon buns. I'm drooling now.
My buddy
Martin go buy a cinnamon
bought
bun.
One too. So between the pair
when
of
when was this?
Oh, probably 3 years ago.
Probably when I figured was it was going to be
just 3 years ago, and he had a box of them.
Yeah, I was going to say. I figured it was going to be longer ago because you took so long to think about how long ago it was.
Well, yeah, I had
like
to
I thought you were going to be like, well, I was 14 and my,
no.
You know.
No,
that was that guy's college education you just bought.
Yeah, yeah. You just bought his 90s college education.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that he must have bought this long box out of a warehouse somewhere. Like, I can't imagine.
Storage Wars.
Yeah, I can't imagine somebody being like, oh, you know what? I think it's going to be an amazing seller in 20 years. Autographed Mr. T books.
You know what's never going to go out of style? Mr. T. Let's do this.
And Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
I bet you he picked it up at like some comic shop, like a Mile High or something like this, like some big, huge bulk lot.
Yeah.
That got sold off at some point in time, or the Silver Snail in Toronto or something like that.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Probably, like, how much for the box? They're like, ugh, 50 bucks, just take it.
Yeah, just take it.
And so he thought he was making a killing at 20 bucks a set, right? Because he knew Neil was there and signing autographs. So he's like, he had a little sign. He's like, buy this Mr. T book and have it signed by Neil. So that's what I did, right? I'm like, ah, it'd be kind of cool to have Mr. T's autograph and Neil's autograph. But then we went there and Neil was asking like 60 bucks an autograph. Mm. And I'm like, I don't know Neil that well.
Neil used to be far more reasonable, and then he kind of got peed off over guys getting his signature for 10, 15, 20 bucks and then turning around selling the comic book for 200 bucks.
Well, to be fair, $60 Canadian is like 35 American, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. 60 Canadian pesos.
Yeah.
That exchange rate is deadly. Just deadly. But we'll see how it goes.
Speaking of exchange rates, Marty, did you had something before the show? You said you had some content and then you said, I'll save it for the show.
God only knows. It could possibly have been
something you were going to buy, maybe.
Was
something
it Green
you bought.
Lantern number one?
No, that's
was
on
it
its
cinnamon
way.
Buns.
Maybe. The only thing I got here on my browser tabs is the True Believer.
Don't show your history.
No.
Not today.
I got special browsers for that.
DuckDuckGo.
Meanwhile, Adam's the one that's giving me like
Adam literally
it,
gave you porn.
Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Doom or something like this.
Oh yeah,
that's a Bill Maher movie. I remember that one. I had that on
so
VHS.
Many good ones in there, Martin. You don't even know. Well, you probably do know just by looking at them.
Life Force. That was a very important movie to a young Martin.
Miranda, what's her name? Miranda, who's the actress in it? Miranda something.
I don't know, but
he's not looking at her name.
Let's just say that access to that type of material greatly increased with the internet.
Yeah.
But anyways, we're coming close to a minute and a half left here. So if anyone's got anything cool and exciting, I didn't pick up any books this week. I didn't get a
We didn't
notice.
Even talk about WandaVision.
The Last Ronin of WandaVision. People watching that?
Yes, it's the first comic book TV show I've watched in years.
I don't know.
And we'll talk about it next time.
The one thing I'm positive about WandaVision is that there's one person in our entire radio show that caught the fact that's a Dick Van Dyke and Bewitched homage in the first two episodes. To which point Adam goes,
if it doesn't end
Dick
with
who?
Her saying
no, Bewitched what? With,
if it doesn't end with her saying no more mutants, I do not care.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll crack into that. We'll be three episodes deep into WandaVision, so we'll chat about that next week. In the meantime, that's it for us this week. Have a great, great time. As always, hit heykidscomics.ca for back issues, back episodes, podcast this stuff. At some point in time, we're going to have to do some ads for Adam's and Dan's new podcast because, you know, they have so much spare time on their hands that they can do their own podcast and then, you know, barely ever show up for this one.
Tune in soon.
Tune. That was a little browbeating there. All right, guys. Thanks, everybody, and have a good week.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like the Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway?
Check for Eugene Levy CFFF promo take 3.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Good level?
Yep.
Bobby Bittman here. I always listen to Trent Radio 92.7. I love this guy. I really do.
Can you do one more of those?
Sure. What was wrong with that one?
Nothing. The level was a little high.
Okay. Hi, this is Bobby Bittman. When I'm in the Kawarthas, I listen to Trent Radio 92.7 FM.